I would like the chief idea officer to please just tell us what you want us to say and we'll say it.
Do we just like drop our names?
I knew everything that was going to happen, but I don't remember watching it.
Hey, this is Jason Lucas.
I mean, what are we recording, bro?
Hey, it's Redbeard. You get out of here and don't come back until you bring me some coffee.
NSFW.
Hey, as a reminder, this is Jason Lucas.
Hey, it's Abby Perry.
I'm Redbeard. Arr.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's Jason Maldonado.
Get my mental druthers ready here.
Do you need to do that red leather, yellow leather?
What is that, like a tongue exercise?
Unique New York.
There you go. Watermelon.
Release the Quacken.
All right, let's get this started.
Welcome to Safety Justice League.
Hey, it's Abby, and I'm back with another episode of the Safety Justice League. And we've got Jason Lucas, Jason Maldonado. We have a special guest, honorary Safety Justice Leaguer today, Lindsay Bell. And we also have our guest, Jesse Awuji. And so I want to throw it to Lindsay super quick to give us her origin story, and then we'll get to Jesse. Welcome, Lindsay.
Hey, Abby. Hi, Jason and Jason. And hey, Jesse. I am a regional health and safety manager at Solvay. I've actually known Abby for about 4 years now. We met through the Women in Safety Excellence Mentorship Program, and we're kind of best buds now. So it's really great.
Awesome. So Lindsay and I, we spoke on a virtual session at Safety 2020 for ASSP on a concept we called Pit Stop, and it's an acronym. And our session was about racing towards inclusivity. Is that even right? I feel like the title's wrong, but regardless.
Racing towards inclusion, Abby.
Inclusion. There you go.
way off. I was going to say diversity, but.
I know. Well,
it's even inclusion. In the title.
Yes. So we did that session. It was really well received. And then people were suggesting that we talk to people at NASCAR. And through the magic of Jason Lucas and his LinkedIn connections, I got in touch with Jesse. And so next, I want to hear from Jesse and give us your superhero origin story, where you came from, and maybe a little bit of how we got here talking to each other.
Yeah, for sure. So, originally from Dallas, Texas, I grew up there my whole life. And both of my parents, they're immigrants from Nigeria. And they decided to settle in Texas and have me and my two brothers and my sister. Grew up there our whole life, and everyone knows football is king in Texas. So I grew up playing football, and while in high school, I worked really hard to put myself in a position to get recruited by some schools. Naval Academy recruited me, and I decided to go to the academy to go play football. It was a great 4 years. Got to play against a lot of great teams and beat Army and Air Force all 4 years. So go Navy, beat Army. And after I graduated from the Naval Academy in 2010, I became a surface warfare officer. I was on the ships for my first 4 years in the Navy, went on two different deployments between my first two ships. And after my second deployment, I came back home and I decided that I wanted to pursue a really crazy goal, and that was becoming a professional race car driver. And I wanted to do it while also still serving the Navy, which had never been done before by anybody. So through a lot of grind, a lot of effort from 2014 all the way through now, I've just been grinding to work my way up through the ranks. It's been difficult, haven't been easy at all, but hey, I've been making it happen and things are good. And now I'm racing in the NASCAR Truck Series.
That's crazy. So do you just like show up with your truck and be like, hey guys, I want to race? I'm guessing it's not like that.
Yeah. I met a guy at a car show. The guy I met at a car show, he was racing late model stock cars. This was back in 2014. I told him about my racing goals, and he said it'd be a good idea to try testing with his race team. And I tested with his race team with a late model stock car back in 2014. It went well, and that was like the beginning of that journey.
Well, let me ask a quick question, Jesse, about the Naval Academy, because I had the opportunity to go and visit it one time. Are they still telling the story about how David Robinson cheated on his swim qual because he was so tall, he was able to just walk around the edge of the pool?
Man, I have not heard that story, but that's the first time. Maybe when I meet him, maybe I'll ask him about it. Like, hey, you know, how'd you make that happen? Because the pools are 15 feet deep, so I didn't realize he was 15 foot tall.
Maybe well, they fibbed to us a little bit on our visit.
So I hear your background and, you know, with the NASCAR stuff and Navy and everything that you have going on, like, it seems like a very risky lifestyle, or like you take on a lot of risk. And all of us in here, we're big time safety nerds. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious how like safety plays into your life.
Yeah, safety's big, definitely in NASCAR, that's for sure, because, you know, we're doing so many things that are pretty dangerous and pretty not normal. So for us, you know, when it comes to equipment that we have, you know, in the vehicles, you know, the driver's suit, your helmet, your Hans device, all this stuff is to keep you safe from fires, is to keep your head safe in the collision, and also to keep your neck in a, you know, good position when you have an impact, because when you're hitting something at well over 100 something miles per hour, it tends to be a lot of whiplash that could break your neck. Back in the day when people did not wear Hans devices, there were some impacts that killed people because their necks got broken just due to the impact. So now wearing Hans devices have definitely helped a lot to keep your head and neck straight and not whipping around during a wreck. The actual vehicle and the tubular frame chassis and all the ways that, you know, and put it, put different safety requirements within that chassis to make sure that it's rigid and safe during wrecks. All that stuff has kept us safe. That's why, you know, you see some crazy crashes at 200 miles per hour. People walk right out of it like nothing happened. You know, that's it's thanks to all the safety that they have. Also at the tracks, they've implemented, you know, all of the safer barriers on the outside walls of the track. So when you're looking at the outer wall of the track as you're running through, that's all safer barrier. Safer barrier basically means it's like a softer type wall that can take a collision and disperse the energy a lot better than a concrete wall. Back in the day, all the walls used to be concrete and now they're not. And that's helped, you know, a lot with the collision and stuff. So when you see someone get turned into the wall at high speeds, it's not as crazy as a collision as it used to be maybe 30 years ago or so. So all those different things, the different ways we've implemented safety requirements for racing to help keep people alive and keep them safe and, you know, allow us to continue to race every single weekend.
That's so cool. So I've got to ask, you already talked a little bit about it, but the balance between being an active Navy officer and a professional race car driver, like how does that work? And have you found that it's a good symbiotic relationship? Because I would imagine, you know, the Navy probably has a lot to gain from your notoriety there. So how does that play out?
Yeah, no, they definitely have a lot to gain. You know, I've been able to balance my Navy commitment and also my racing pretty well now. When I first started racing, I was active duty and, you know, I was still working on shore duty at that time. I wasn't on the ships anymore. And I definitely had some time on the weekends to race. So, you know, we'd fly out on Friday night after work, go race on Saturday, fly back home on Sunday, go back to work again on Monday. I do that, you know, 14, 15, 16 weekends a year, sometimes more. And now I'm in the Navy Reserves, so I'm not working full-time as a naval officer anymore. I'm now just working part-time as a naval officer. But, you know, now my reserve drill weekends are on weekends now. So there's been times where I've raced on a Friday night and then had to boogie to, you know, my base to do my drill the next morning. And sometimes that drive is 8 hours, 7 hours, you name it, but I make it happen because I'm still trying to race and serve at the same time to show people in the military that it's definitely possible and it can definitely work.
So you're saying 8 hours, but why don't you just take your truck and just like, it's like a 2 hour drive, right?
Yeah, you can do that before.
If it was only street legal in California to take that thing around, I would.
Yeah, but they can't catch you. So it's all good.
Yeah, but I can't outrun the radio. That's the only thing.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
So I wanted to segue over to the inclusion or in the how safety professionals and how NASCAR drivers are, we kind of are having these moments right now where our industries are crossing over into the greater societal conversation about diversity, race, inclusion. NASCAR just brought in some upper level people to lead a diversity and inclusion effort. And so I know for a while there, Jesse, I was seeing you on the TV a lot and on the Twitter and everything else a lot talking about this. How do you feel about that? Like, how are you using your position for influence in that conversation?
Yeah, for me, being one of two African-Americans in the national series of NASCAR, only two of us. There's not that many at all. There's a few others who are racing like late model stock cars and things like that. We're trying to work their way up. But right now, there's only two of us in the top three series. So, what I'm trying to do is just use my platform to, create, positivity and unity and all that stuff. I'm all about, united as a country will rise, the divided will fall. So I'm trying to unite everyone. It's not a black versus white thing. It's not a white versus black. It's not a anything versus anything. It's all of us together. There's powers out there. There's people who are trying to divide us, trying to create chaos, trying to, keep things, running very chaotic right now because it's election year and for other reasons too. And I'm just trying to unite everybody. I don't believe division. We come together, we're very strong, and nothing can stop us. Let's do that. So I've been using my platform to really preach that and push that. And Bubba Wallace has been, definitely preaching, everything that he has recently, just to, also help create some unity also.
That's a lot of responsibility.
That's awesome, though. It's awesome.
It really is. I mean, I didn't realize you said just two. I mean, that, I don't know. I just feel it's a lot of responsibility to be leading the conversation too. So as with safety, I guess also when we're trying to influence on safety issues in our workplaces, often, we're kind of out there on our own as well. So maybe a little bit about like how to find allies, or once you do find some allies, like how we can work them into helping us amplify any messages.
Yeah. Finding allies is definitely key in anything you do. I mean, at the end of the day, networking makes the world go round. You got to find people who are like-minded. You got to find people who are on the same mission and the same step as you. There will be people out there who seem to be on the same step, who seem to be on the same mission, but they're really not. They have other agendas. You got to find those people. You got to spot them. You got to get them out of your life. But you got to align with people who are trying to do all the right things and all for the right reasons. At the end of the day, good will win, evil will lose. And it's tough. It's tough because in this world, so much is going on. Everyone is trying to go left. Everyone's trying to go right. Going straight, up, down. Everyone's going in so many different directions. We've got to get the same stuff. We've got to do this in unison, and we got to figure out a way to make some positive changes. Safety. With all the racial tension stuff, the medical field, wherever, all these places, there's everywhere. We all need that positive change right now.
Interested in one thing, you mentioned a little bit about how over the years the design has changed, the safety gear, the crash barriers, and the cars themselves, and all this. One of the things that I think is really intriguing, and if you talk to some of the gurus on, say, the human and organizational performance spectrum, they're going to talk about how the car industry in general has tried to engineer a safer car rather than build a perfect human, which we know you can't do. So do you see some of those innovations come into the real world? I mean, or is that already happening? Is that something that it could make a bigger scale and really take into the world and make driving safer?
Yeah, no. I mean, you talk about building the perfect human. Right now I'm working on this super soldier serum. No, I'm just kidding. Nice. No, but yeah. So when it comes to safety and stuff, implementing it, this is the thing with racing. Racing has always been a platform for testing different things out and then bringing it out to the commercial world. So, that's the point of automobile manufacturers of being involved in racing, because they can take technology, they can take data, they can take information they've collected from the racing world and apply it to the commercial, like streetcar world and street van, and street truck world and all that stuff. When you look at tires and how tires wear over the course of time due to different stresses and strains, you can apply that to tires we use on the streets. When we look at the rigidity of vehicles and see, hey, how do you make a vehicle, you know, stay pretty sturdy, not flex a lot, be able to take impacts in certain ways and keep the driver safe. You know, we look at things that happen in the racing world because that's the extreme world where you can look at all the extreme factors hitting a vehicle, hitting a person, and be like, how does it affect them there? Let's take that. Let's put that into the streetcar world to make these vehicles safer because, you know, hopefully people aren't getting in wrecks on the street at 200 miles per hour. Hopefully it's like, you know, a quarter of that or less. And you know, all that stuff is definitely coming from the racing world and going now into the streetcar world to help a lot. So you're starting to see chassis be a lot more sturdy, a lot more rigid. And that's because of the tubular frame chassis that you see in racing vehicles. And you're starting to see a lot of different things. I mean, unfortunately, in the racing world, we do not have airbags, but we have other things to keep us real safe with our 5-point harnesses and things like that, 6-point harnesses. So yeah, a lot of technology, a lot of information is coming from the racing world and going into the streets world for our street vehicles that we use on a daily basis.
You know, Jesse and Lindsay, I think that neither one of you may know this, but Jason Maldonado is our editor here. But for a fun fact, is Maldonado means ability to make right turns in Urdu.
Wow. Is that actually true?
We'll never know.
Find out next on A&E.
We have to have Jesse stay on and make some promos.
I know, right? He's got to do like, welcome to Safety Justice League.
You know, welcome. Jesse, I grew up with a dad who was a huge NASCAR fan. He still is. And that was always our running joke as he was teaching me to drive was, you know, are you going to teach me how to make right-hand turns as well? Uh-huh. And, you know, eventually he said that we would get into that in my training to drive.
Yeah, we do turn right in NASCAR quite a bit, actually. What people don't realize is when you go into a corner, especially on an oval track, sometimes the vehicle will get pretty loose. And when it gets loose, that means it's getting kind of bent out of shape. It's getting a little sideways. When it gets sideways, you have to countersteer it. When you countersteer, that's turning the wheel to the right a little bit to catch the vehicle so that you don't oversteer and spin out wreck. So we do a lot of countersteering. So when you watch the onboard footage of vehicle racing and you see them going in the corner and twitching around with the steering wheel and fighting it and sawing at it a little bit, that is because they're countersteering, trying to keep that thing from spinning out. And that's how we turn right on a oval track. Now, when you go to road courses, which is what we run also, we run a few road courses a year. We turn left and right all the time on there because there's left and right turns at different speeds. So I will hopefully be running a road course race at some point this year. I'm working on that right now. But that's the place where we do turn left and right.
Good job.
Left turn.
But one of the things I did want to ask Jesse is going back to how you said there's only, you know, two African-American drivers in NASCAR. So when we talk about diversity, me and Abby have kind of started to hit on the point where you really need to have inclusion first. So a lot of the efforts are a little bit backwards because if you are diverse but not inclusive, your diverse people tend to just leave because they're not in safe spaces. So can you tell us, you know, what NASCAR is doing or the types of efforts that are happening within NASCAR to affect inclusion?
Yeah, I would say like on the racing side of it, I believe it's always been inclusive. The reason why you don't see a lot of African Americans racing in NASCAR, I don't think it has anything to do with anybody particularly saying you can't race here in NASCAR. It's been it's just been difficult to find a sponsorship to race. Finding sponsorships is not easy at all. And who knows, maybe it wasn't distributed to people who wanted to race before who were African American. I don't know. I don't know how NASCAR used to be 15, 20 years ago or more. But right now, really, it's the biggest thing. It's just, you know, to race, it's just not cheap. You know? If I'm, you know, just if I'm a 8-year-old kid, you know, African American, and I'm looking at, hey, what sport do I want to do? So I'm looking at, you know, racing and NASCAR. I'm like, oh, that looks interesting. Well, I can't go to the store and go buy a race car and go practice every day and then get drafted and go race. That's just not how it works. But you can go grab a football or basketball or baseball or soccer ball, go work on that for pretty cheap, and then go eventually go off to college, play those sports, and go off to, you know, some type of professional league and play. For NASCAR, you got to race different things on your way up, and all that just costs money. Whether you're buying your own or renting your own equipment, it just costs a lot of money, and people shy away from it because, like, you know what, I don't want to learn to be a marketing major and also be a race car driver. I just want to be a race car driver. So it's just difficult. So that's why you're probably not seeing, that's why some people think it might not be inclusive. Not that's not inclusive. It's just what you have to do to get there is difficult, very difficult. And some people just don't want to go that route. Now, as far as in industry at NASCAR, as far as like people working for NASCAR, they're doing different things. Like they just started a diversity and inclusion department. Brandon Thompson runs that now. I know him. And I'm not sure exactly what they're doing within to make things feel more inclusive, but hopefully they're doing a lot, and I'm sure they probably are. I don't work in NASCAR, so I don't know all of their efforts in there, but they're definitely trying to do a lot of things to help the help everything. They were able to ban the Confederate flag. That was great. Something that needed to be done a long time ago. A lot of the fans didn't like that, but that's okay. If they want to leave the sport, that's fine. Nobody needs anybody who wants to continue to follow a flag of a losing nation. And there's only one country here, that's the United States of America. When I signed up for the military, I didn't sign up to protect the freedoms of the Confederacy. I signed up to protect the freedoms of one nation under God, and that's the United States of America.
But I don't know if you know this, Jesse, but Jason is old enough that he had the choice, and he picked the... He picked correctly.
Oh, wow. That's great. I really love what Jesse just said, because it connected some dots on a concept that some people are talking about more, where in our industry, and I guess with a lot of industries, people talk about mentoring, and that mentoring has been this big push over the years. But now we're trying to switch the conversation so that we're talking about sponsorship. And Jesse, what you're talking about with NASCAR, it's like literal sponsorship, as in, you know, paying the way and having the opportunities paid for young kids to get interested, and or young adults to try these things out or start karting first and then get into other racing. It's a great example of mentoring versus sponsorship. Instead of saying, yeah, you can be a driver, it's great. Okay, how about actually put down the money so that the kids and the young adults can actually try it? So I think that's a great way to bring home that example of why sponsorship is that new frontier versus mentoring.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, at the end of the day, companies and brands, if they're really, really trying to support, you know, diversity and inclusive efforts, especially in the sport, they want to see more African-Americans, minorities, you know, women, all those people racing. They got to put their money where their mouth is. You know, people can talk all day, oh man, you know, I want to see you do great. Well, then help me, you know, help that person. Like they need money. It like costs money. They're not trying to get money just to put in their pockets to be rich. You know, they just need money to just get on the track and race, you know? So if you really want to help, if you want to do it, help that driver accomplish that goal. Like go buy them the tires it costs for the weekend, go pay for the team to be there, go, you know, whatever. Like they need that level of support. So if you like racing and you want to support and see more, then, you know, stop talking and start doing.
Yeah, I think that translates into a lot of different areas in life. You know, it's hard to start a small business. It's hard to do, you know, like you said, any kind of professional activity that requires a big entrance fee. There's a lot of people out there that would probably rock it and, you know, probably better than we've ever seen before, but they've just never had the means to do that. And I think that if people understood how to give their time and how to give their mentorship in terms of sponsoring the person instead, that would be huge. So it's a great message.
Yeah, most definitely. That is for sure. I mean, people need it.
Do we want to do a lightning round with Jesse and ask questions? Jesse, are you prepared for just random questions from all of us in rapid fire?
Easy day.
He's like, so, do you realize how fast I drive?
Yeah, I drive 200 miles an hour. I can answer your stupid questions.
This is true. Jason Lucas, do you want to tell our contestant the rules?
Oh, absolutely. So here in this lightning round, Jesse, you're going to have 10 seconds or less answer a lightning round question from each of the participants. So it'll give you an opportunity to think on your feet or think on your seat. That was a NASCAR joke. Yeah. You'll have that opportunity in this lightning round.
And I think I think in honor today, I'm going to use this.
No way. That's awesome. Okay, who's asking the first question?
Lindsay.
Hey, can it be like literally anything?
Anything.
Okay, Jesse. When you were a child, so like under 15, what was a Christmas present you always wanted but never got?
A Christmas present I always wanted but never got. I would say it was probably it was one of the video games that I really wanted. It's for Super Nintendo. I believe it was Mortal Kombat.
Oh, I was going to do it right before you said Mortal Kombat.
Jesse, what was your... No. I'm next. Otherwise, I'll forget my question. Jesse, what was your first car?
First car was a 1995 Ford Mustang V6.
Nice.
Mine was 1995 Ford Aspire.
It aspired to be a Mustang.
Yeah.
Here we go, Jesse. What is the best branch of service, the Marine Corps or the Marine Corps?
Or the Air Force?
It's the United States Navy.
Wrong answer.
You heard him. He said Air Force. What is the proper way to eat whipped cream?
The proper way to eat whipped cream is by putting it on a milkshake. Chocolate.
Okay, I'll take that.
Okay, I got another one. Jesse, what is the last thought that goes through your mind before the green flag is waved in a race?
Help me, God.
What's your favorite color?
Black.
that's kind of fitting.
Sense of color, but okay.
Lindsay's very technical.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Oh man.
Okay, I got one last one. Okay. All right, Jesse. How often did substitute teachers mispronounce your last name?
Hardly ever.
Good job.
Really?
Seriously, they can't even pronounce my first name, and it's Lindsay.
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 Is it really?
Oh, they just make things up. Lindsley, Tinsley,
I sat through an award ceremony one time at school. I was like in third or fourth grade, and they announced my name, but they butchered it so terribly that I didn't know it was me.
That's amazing.
You know, another little known fact is that Maldonado means mispronounced last name in Indonesian.
That is true.
It really does. So I guess that's the end of the lightning round. That was my favorite lightning round because of the questions and also the sound effect.
Yeah.
Nice. I'll keep it.
Sweet. That was your cue to do it again.
Yeah. Sorry. I did it with my hand, but you can't see. So this is the time in the show when I like to ask our guests to just plug whatever the heck they want to tell our audience about. Why don't you let our listeners know where they can find you, where maybe your next race is, anything else you want to tell us about?
Find me on social media by just looking me up. I'm pretty easy to get a hold of. I just look up my name, Jesse. Last name is IWUJI. If you can't remember that, just go on Google and type in Navy NASCAR driver. That will be the only one that pops up for about 5 pages. And you can go to my website. You can sign up for my newsletter. You can order stuff. You can order as much as you want. And I'm cool with that. Yeah, that's how you can find me and follow me. And what's coming up for me next is a lot of great stuff. I'm doing some stuff with NBC Sports, racing. You will see it all pop up on social media. And I let everyone know usually the week anything great is going on.
Very cool. This has been really fun and informative. Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Jesse.
Yeah, most definitely. You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
The views expressed on this podcast are solely the opinions of the hosts and their guests, not necessarily their employer, organization, committee, or any other group or individual on this planet or any yet to be discovered containing intelligent life. The podcast is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. Nothing within this recording is intended to be used as legal guidance or representation of any entity. No portion of the podcast may be reproduced without the express written consent of the show's creator, Safety Justice League, LLC. But hey, ask us nicely, we'll probably share.